Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in. The next 10 minutes are inspired by a white belt and an old book. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the engine. Things like math and long-term academic pursuits, long-term physical pursuits, right? If you're in athletics or you have a career you're working on, these things take a lot of time. And as such, it's very difficult to track progress, right? When I was working in up through the ranks in jiu-jitsu, it was excruciating, right? Because you start out as a white belt, you're worthless, right? I mean, on your first day, you literally know nothing. And then as you go, you start learning things, but it's a long time before you finally beat somebody, before you submit somebody, right? And when you're a white belt, even the next level, the blue belt up, it could take years to get that. And in jiu-jitsu, it's very different than a lot of the classical martial arts because the progress is painfully slow and there are only 5 belts, okay? It's not like you get a bunch of intermediate belts and you're getting new belts every 3 months or every 6 months and so you feel really comfortable about it and you're like, oh, I'm making progress. That helps, obviously. But with jiu-jitsu, it takes forever, right? And it's tough. But when you're a blue belt, when you're purple belt, brown belt, or black belt, you start beating the lower belts, right? So you can see very easily when you're a blue belt. You're like, ah, I used to be a white belt, and they're making all the mistakes I used to make, and now I can beat them because I know these new moves, and ha, see, I have proof that I have made progress. And when you're a purple belt, you beat all the blue belts and white belts and brown belt, blah, blah, blah. And as a black belt, you can beat a lot of people, right? Unless you're getting beat by another really good black belt or just a dynamite brown belt, which happens. Absolutely. Anybody can be beat by anybody. But when you're a white belt, man, you're not beating anybody. And it's just this bloodbath. And because of that, a lot of times people quit. Most people quit as white belts, and then the next great attrition is blue belt because you fight so hard for so long to get to blue from white, and you just don't have anything left. It's over. You get your blue belt, and then you don't. And you just stop coming to training. You've achieved, and you're happy, and you're gone. And it really made me think about how white belts really need other white belts. Like if you're a first day guy, you're not doing anything. Okay, and that's painful. But when you're a white belt that's been going for like 6 months, you really need, you know, somebody who's been there 4 months or 2 months or 1 month or even a first day guy. Not to be mean, but just to see that there has been progress, right? White belts need other white belts so that they can see mistakes, they can see progress, they can see things that are happening, which is really great. But the difficulty in academics, especially, let's say if I'm teaching somebody math, I have a student that I'm working with a lot of math right now. It's kind of like, how does he compare himself to other white belts, right? Because in an SAT class, you're not asking other people directly, hey, what'd you get on the homework? Hey, what'd you miss? And again, we talk about all that stuff. It's not like we hide it, but it's also not the kind of thing where this kid's going to look over and see somebody who he's like fighting with on the homework, you know, he's like, ha, you beat me by one last week and this week I beat you by one. You know, it's not like that. And because of that, I've been wondering what it is that keeps students engaged when they don't have other white belts, right? Because again, you really don't, you don't have that kind of immediate comparison. And because of that, it can be very difficult to track progress. And if you can't track progress, you get discouraged very easily. And I recently thought about a book I read back when I was about 23, 24. It's called The Snowball. It was Warren Buffett's biography. And he spoke about this concept of an internal versus external scoreboard. And I didn't really get it at the time. But as the years went on, I absolutely got it. And now I see 100% what he was saying. And he would say, look, people who allow an external scoreboard to dominate their lives, they allow other people to tell them if they're doing things right or wrong, right? They allow other people's judgment to cloud their actions and their opinions and all these things. An internal scoreboard, Buffett argued, was when you knew what you were doing was right or wrong no matter what. You knew if you were on the right track and you didn't let other people affect that scoreboard. And Buffett has been, I mean, he's obviously one of the great investors of our time, you know, not necessarily the greatest businessman, but one of the greatest investors. And there were a lot of times in this biography when he said people didn't believe what he was doing was right, but obviously he has, over the test of time of an entire lifetime, proven them to be wrong. He really knew, he knew what he was doing, at least a little bit more than the average bear. And, you know, definitely more than people like Bernie Madoff and things like that. So Buffett's concept of the internal scoreboard started kind of ringing in my head when I was thinking about people who are trying to get better at something and have no comparison. Because at the end of the day, I think it comes down to character. I think it comes down to you having strength of character to stop looking for external reinforcement. Right, the student who's struggling on math, he's not going to get, I mean, I try to be positive 100%, but he's not going to get enough positivity from me to keep going in the right direction. Right? He'll never get enough, "Hey, you're doing great," from me to combat him looking at problems and thinking, "Gosh, I have no idea how to do this." Right? If I do my job right, I help 100%. But what it ultimately comes down to, I've started realizing, is will the student have an internal scoreboard and the strength of character to look at small things, to look at small mistakes that he was making last week and now he's not making? No one else will know that he's not making these mistakes anymore. No one else will know the mistakes he still is making. He will have to stomach the difficulty of understanding there's so much more to learn. And he will also have to give himself due credit for the little things he's improving on. Nobody else is going to be able to help him through that situation. It's his scoreboard, internally. And if he lets other people or the world start chalking up points or taking away points, I don't think he gets it. I don't think he makes the progress he can. I think this goes for every single student I've ever worked with. The high end, the low end, it doesn't matter. Those that make progress are ones that have internal scoreboards that they keep track of. They know who they are. They know what progress they're making or not making. But they're honest with themselves. Not honest in as a substitution for criticism. Because that's what people talk about frequently. Oh, I reflected and I was a terrible person, or I thought about my actions, I'm such an idiot. No. If you're going to have real self-reflection, you have to be positive just like you're negative. Because not everything you do is negative. Well, at least most likely. But man, the internal scoreboard. That's the thing for white belts that are first days. That's the thing for the person who has no exterior stimulus or positivity or any kind of indication that they're coming forward. If you can develop that, if you can know you, if you can know where you've been, where you're going, what your goals are, then you will keep making progress. But it will always come down to what's on the inside. I'm Matt Todd, and this is The Engine That Drives Me. Go out and crush it.